Hi, everybody. Welcome to Directly Speaking, a D2C Marketing Leaders podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the D2C and e-com space. Together, we like to explore industry trends, best practices, and inspiration from our hosts, our clients' point of view. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster. We're glad to have today with us Dan Spiegel, head of marketing at Branch. Over Dan's career, he's worked across a multitude of marketing disciplines, including media, growth, brand, and creative. He was one of the first marketing hires on the FanDuel team in 2014 and helped to scale that company from a small niche fantasy sports game to a globally recognized sports and entertainment brand. He's also worked in a marketing agency in Brooklyn called Dan Jason & Company, and now currently finds himself in the role of head of marketing at Branch. Dan, I'm really pumped to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Why don't you first, since you've had such an interesting career, tell us a little bit about the path you've been on and your time at FanDuel and how you ended up at Branch.
Yeah, you know, the early part of my career was agency side. I worked in media. I actually went to school for copywriting, and I remember having an interview when I was a senior in college with Ogilvy & Mather, which was still and what, you know, was at the time and still is now one of the sort of like premier ad agencies. And I remember walking out of that interview feeling very confident that I nailed a job offer, and then finding out about a month later that I did not.
We've all been there.
Yeah. And so I came back to New York, where I'm from, and just started job hunting. And at the time it was like looking at like job posts in like the New York Times, like classified section. And I found a job at like a very small direct response media agency. And, you know, I sort of became like a media planner there. I actually started as the front desk guy. I was like signing for the UPS packages and stuff like that. But it was, you know, I sort of got a job in media there. And you know, if you remember, there were those like magazine things where you'd get like the Columbia House, like, you know, get like 100 CDs for a quarter.
Whatever. I remember those. I subscribed.
I was the guy placing that stuff. And I was also the guy placing like the proactive face solution ads in like, you know, Us Weekly and all this kind of stuff. So I was doing this. This was like heavy duty direct response kind of advertising. And I left that to join a bigger, you know, more mainstream media agency, MediaVest at the time, where we had clients like Kraft Foods, Coca-Cola, et cetera. You know, that sort of exposed me to like, you know, very big industry, obviously. But you kind of also quickly learn just how low down the food chain you were in terms of the overall decision making and how the marketing mix worked and so forth. So after doing that for a few years, I decided to go get a degree, a business degree. And following that, I came back and worked in consulting for some time. Consulting ultimately took me over to brand consulting. So I worked at a company called Interbrand, which is sort of like a, you know, brand strategy and identity kind of consultancy that works with very big, you know, Fortune 100, 500 companies. And so you get a chance there to work with some of the biggest companies in the world and kind of help them figure out, you know, all sorts of challenges related to, you know, their brand and their marketing efforts. So I worked with like UPS, I worked with AT&T, et cetera. And while I was at, Interbrand, I remember I was at the gym one morning and I got a call from a headhunter who said, oh, I got this small, you know, fantasy sports company that's looking for a brand leader. And I was a big fantasy sports fan. You know, I played it from the time that I was a kid with my buddies. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. I never heard of the company. It was called FanDuel. It was still a very small business. And, you know, I go through the interview process and it starts to feel like, whoa, this is very like, you know, sort of meant to be. I'm a sports nut. I sort of have this, you know, domain expertise in brand building. This is what they're looking to do. They actually were very heavy at the time, direct response advertiser. And so it all kind of fit, right? You could take your direct response, career, marry it with your brand building knowledge, wrap it all in sports, which was sort of a passion of mine. And so I joined. I think the company was like 50-ish people at the time. We were in a little, this was like before WeWork was even really like a big thing, like a sort of knockoff WeWork in Union Square, you know, where just like a room full of guys sitting there. You know, kind of went on a 4-year crazy journey there where
it's awesome.
We grew the business like crazy. We ended up sort of, you know, having a number of challenges that hit. We were about to merge with our competitor DraftKings. We ended up not merging. And at the end of that journey, I left and sort of felt like, you know, I feel like I have a lot I can now bring to bear for other companies. And I had a friend of mine who I'd worked with at Interbrand, and we went and started our own agency.
And that's why you started your own agency. You felt like you could really lever some of the lessons you learned at FanDuel.
Totally.
And so how long did you do that for?
We did that for 4 years. And so, you know, we started out doing a bunch of stuff with some fintech brands. He and I both had like a pretty good, you know, financial services background. Branch, which is now my current employer, was I think our third client. Branch was at the time we met the company was just two people, the two co-founders, Steve and Joe, who had this amazing idea for a new insurance company. And so we were fortunate enough to help them develop all the early sort of branding and, you know, site experience and help set the culture and do a lot of the early marketing. And so toward the end of my time at my own agency, Dan and Jason, I ended up sort of making the decision to join Branch full time. It was something that I was super passionate about, so I did.
Well, that leads to the question that I think probably several of our listeners have. What's unique about Branch? Tell us about the company. Tell us about your offering and what sets you apart.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And it's sort of ironic because this is like my job to be able to tell the story really well. But we say a lot at Branch, like we have a story that's almost like irreducibly complex to tell. Because when you ask Marcus, like what makes Branch different? So much makes Branch different. But if I tried to simplify it, fundamentally, at the end of the day, what we are is a insurance company that uses data, technology, and automation to make insurance less expensive so that more people can be covered. We are, you could sort of think of us as like State Farm if State Farm was invented in the 21st century.
Got it.
We bundle home and auto insurance. So these are two products people buy. About 80% of people want to bundle their home and auto insurance. The problem is it's super hard to do. When you do bundle, you typically save somewhere between $500 to $1,000, but it's just super hard to do. And the reason for that is not complicated. You know, most of the big insurance companies in the world today started in a time before cars were being driven around.
Existed.
And so they began as fire and dwelling insurance companies, and then as cars started to proliferate, they would start to add that in, whether that was through acquisition or growth. But, you know, they sort of built businesses where they want to bundle. Bundling has also, I mean, no matter the industry, bundling always has huge advantages. You sell multiple policies or multiple products to the same person. It lowers your acquisition costs and it increases your retention. This is why like the phone, AT&T will sell you a landline when nobody wants one. They'll give it to you for free because they know it'll increase your retention. Mm-hmm. You know, what we're able to do, which is novel and new for the world, is we can bundle someone's home and auto insurance with just two pieces of information. You come to our website, you put your name and your address in, and you hit see my price. We have built a system that can automatically collect all the information securely and safely that exists that we need in order to underwrite, bind, and give you insurance for your car and for your home. We do it all automatically. The fastest we ever did it, front to back, was 62 seconds, and the person saved something like $700.
Wow, that's awesome.
And this could take hours, if not days, and sometimes even weeks at other companies.
Gotcha. So, what's your customer look like? Is there a specific demographic? Or
yes. So our customer, it's funny because I feel like in a lot of cases, like when you have tech companies, there's a tendency to believe that like, oh, they're going after the younger, you know, millennial, Gen Z cohort. That's more, you know, sort of, natively working with tech companies. We actually are acquiring the kind of premier customer that you want, in that what we do is, because we sell home and auto, we like to say we go in through the front door, not the garage. In other words,
Gotcha.
we're selling homeowners who have cars. And so that tends to be someone at a higher household income with, sort of a lot of good qualities. And this is a really good customer, right? They retain for a very long period of time. When you can sell the two policies, they're likely to stay with you for upwards of a decade. And so that has all sorts of downstream, really good impacts on the business and the way we build it.
So what you're saying is that LTV to CAC ratio plays out, that they've got a long high LTV, which helps you out big time. How
Totally.
do you go about
I mean,
acquiring them?
sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. We sort of have three main ways that we bring customers in. And I'll sort of go. I'll end it on what I would sort of deem to be the most kind of special. The first one is direct to consumer. So there are people shopping for insurance all the time. They're buying homes, they're buying cars, and insurance happens to be a compulsory product category. So when you do need those two things, you need them. So the purchase intent is like very, very high in those moments. And there is like a very real hyper competitive marketplace in which we are competing with the Progressives and the Allstates of the world to go get those really great customers. The reason we have an advantage in those moments is because we have this amazing bundling capability. So the unit economics for us look a lot different than the unit economics look like for some of our competitors, because when we go pay to get that lead, we could sell them multiple policies. So that's one. Two, there is a network of something like 50,000 independent agencies all across the country. They love us because if you can imagine being an insurance agent, what you want to do is you want to be a coverage counselor for your customers. What you don't want is to be a person who's just ingesting lots and lots of data and information about the person. When was your roof fixed? When was the house built? How many miles is it? We get all that information for them automatically. So they can move way more into high value conversations about what kind of coverage should you have. So they love us for that. And then the third and really the most special way that we acquire customers is, I think it's important to sort of think about it like this. As far as I know, in the history of mankind, no one ever woke up in the morning and said, "You know what I really want to do today? Buy home or auto insurance." You don't buy it the way you are excited to buy a pair of Nikes or an iPhone. You buy it because you have to buy it.
Right.
And the reason that insurance is both so painful to buy, typically, and also increasingly more and more expensive every year, is fundamentally about how it is distributed. Imagine if you bought a car and it didn't come with a steering wheel. What would happen is there'd be a whole marketplace for steering wheels, where everybody would want to sell you their steering wheel because they know you need it. And imagine even moreover if you somehow had to pay for the steering wheel every single year at renewal, and it became like an annuity for the steering wheel companies. So what happens is there's this huge marketplace that happens independent of the underlying transaction, like the buying of the car or the buying of the house or the mortgage. And it pushes you into this other market where everyone drives up the cost of insurance because they're competing to acquire the same customers. And someone has to pay for those acquisition costs. And who pays those acquisition costs is the customer,
Customer,
right?
yeah.
And so what we've sort of learned is because it's such a high intent purchase, if you can embed into the moment where the person needs insurance, so in the moment where they're getting a mortgage or in the moment where they're buying the car, then you can make it available. You can make it easy to buy because it just requires two pieces of information. If you can bundle the two things together, because 80% of people want a bundle, you can, one, for yourself, acquire the best customers at the lowest cost per acquisition. Two, you can make an extremely delightful experience for the customer that makes them happy and keeps them retained. And you can actually advantage the mortgage. So now the mortgage company can close better. So everybody wins.
So it sounds to me like it's you have a real advantage at the point at which it's the original purchase. How do you go out and get a guy like me who's already got a house and a car
How do we get you to switch?
to switch? Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is really a great question. At the end of the day, we're sort of making a bet on the fact that people like to save a lot of money.
Got it.
And if they can save a lot of money without spending a lot of time, that's a big win. We are very much in the moment now, I would say, as a business and as like a marketing team, where there is so much demand lower funnel that we spend a lot of our time competing to win.
Yep.
You know, admittedly, it is harder to stop a Marcus Lancaster in his tracks if you are on Instagram or you are on Facebook or you are watching a football game and get you to stop that enjoyable thing and get you to switch
over. I'm going
to
go look at insurance.
It's really hard to do that.
I got you.
And this, again, is why, though, but Marcus, you will get a car. You will buy a home. You will do these other things. And in those moments, you are going to need insurance. And we're betting that when you need it, we'll be able to make it more delightful for you.
Gotcha. So in the D2C portion of your marketing marketing journey, you know, what are the tactics you're using? It sounds like probably heavy SEO, but what else?
You know, it's funny. Like, I feel like the playbook very often is like Facebook, Instagram, Google. Again, like some of that stuff is insurance is so intent driven. And so if you start trying to stop people from looking at their friends or looking at pictures of other people's babies, they're not going to do it. You can use those tools to help create some brand awareness and trust and loyalty to accelerate a lot of the stuff you do elsewhere, which is going into the marketplaces where people are shopping for insurance and competitively bidding on a lot of that traffic. And you can accelerate some of that stuff using some more traditional brand building tools. But fundamentally, a lot of it is going to those marketplaces and bidding.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I figured it'd be SEO. You know, I've decided I'm done with my current company. I'm going for somebody else. I'm going to type in good insurance unless I get direct marketing or something. So that's the reason why insurers go to a lot of different direct marketing methods. I figured SEO would be a big part of your play.
Well,
obviously,
you touch on something though, right? Because some of being at a company that's like 4 years old and growing as quickly as we are is like, you know, you are admittedly operating in somewhat near term tactics.
Sure.
You know, that being said, you know, if you just thought about the sort of like direct to consumer insurance universe, this is sort of how I think about it. You've got a whole world where, like, I sort of think of it as like, there's this like prevailing belief that people don't care about insurance. They don't think about it and they don't really want to know all that much about it. And like, at the end of the day, like what you need to do is you need to like lodge yourself as deep into their brain as you can and just like sit there and wait until the moment that they need to buy insurance. And at the moment that they need to buy insurance, you bet that what they're going to remember is $15 could save you 15% or more, or you're in good hands, or whatever the slogan or jingle may be. And so what ends up happening is you have these like mnemonics that every insurance company invests in building, which are like their mascots,
brand.
Right?
Yep.
And like the commercials are like a little bit of like skit to sell, right? Like we're going to entertain you for 13 seconds and then we're going to pitch you for two.
Yeah,
that's the deal, right? You know, I think we have a belief that what this has done is it has sort of miseducated people on how to think about insurance. Let me tell you a little bit about the genesis of insurance in America. If you go back 150, 170 years ago, this is how insurance starts to spread throughout the country. You've got farmers all over the country who have a really big risk, right? They have like these barns, they have these homes made of wood. And if a fire spreads, it's going to wipe out their home, could wipe out crop. It could destroy their financial well-being and kind of ruin their lives. And so they get smart and they say, hey, why don't we do this? Let's get together and let's pool some money and let's make an agreement that if anyone's home is destroyed or anyone's thing is destroyed, we will all pitch in and get them back on their feet. And this is where the term barn raising comes from. the community would literally come together and raise the barn back up to get that person back on the field. It's a little cheesy,
but awesome.
you could think of this, Marcus, as almost like the original like social network for, you know, like,
yeah.
This is what this was. And so if you just thought about your relationship with insurance in that moment, your relationship with insurance was an intensely communal sense of protection. Like we're literally banding together and we're protecting each other. And the way Branch is constructed is we are actually what's called a reciprocal exchange. And in a reciprocal exchange, the way it works is the customers, we actually call them members because they are members of the community. They pool their money. We facilitate them pooling their money through our tech, our data, and our automation. And then they are the owners of the capital. And so this is a communal enterprise at the end of the day. It's all about helping them see, and this is why the company is called Branch. It's all about helping them see the forest through the trees. The fact that we are actually all better together. That's what insurance is at its most fundamental level. And so what that means is we're not going to have like Branchy the Branch on a commercial talking to you and like, you know, doing silly skits. Rather, we are going to work through the experience we deliver, the content we produce, the relationship we build with our members to educate them, to help them understand insurance better. And so when you allow this to be the person which you look at things, it is intensely powerful in terms of how you start to think about content strategy into the future, how you start to think about the experience that you deliver.
All right, well, let's throw in a couple personal questions at you. What recharges your batteries? How do you, what does Dan do on a day off?
Oh man, you know, I'm a father of a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I've been told that I'm like a high energy, sort of intense person. These two put me to shame with their energy and intensity. And so, you know, it's funny, like I go into every weekend. One of the things I love about being at Branch is like, it's a lot of people with families and, you know, don't get me wrong, you're working at a fast growing startup. There's times you're like working at off hours and weird times, but by and large, you know, I spend a lot of time with my family. I often find that like I come in on Monday, I'm almost a little more tired than I am on a Friday.
Just cause that's a good sign, actually. All right. So last question. I like to throw this one at everybody. Go back to Dan of 10 years ago. What's one thing you know now that you wish you'd known then?
You know, I would say it's all going to be okay. You know, I think like we have a tendency, particularly earlier in our careers, to sometimes make mountains out of molehills.
Yeah. True that.
And things feel like really, really intense and big. I'm a sort of intense person by nature. I've had times in my career where I've gotten myself so stressed out. I was like in the hospital and I thought my appendix was going to burst or whatever. And, you know, you kind of look back on those things and you realize, man, it's going to be okay.
No, that's fantastic. All right. Well, if somebody wants to connect, how do they reach out?
I'm on LinkedIn. Dan Spiegel, Branch. There's a few Dan Spiegels. Look for the one at Branch.
Fantastic. Well, Dan, I want to just thank you personally for taking the time today. It's great talking to you. You taught me a few things. It sounds like you guys got a great product and a lot of momentum growing in the marketplace. And we're just glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It's fun.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us on Directly Speaking today. We really hope you enjoyed the content, enjoyed the opportunity to get to know Dan and Branch a little bit better. We really hope to have you with us again soon. Until then, keep selling.